This hour, we've been talking about what it's like to navigate different cultural identities when you're not just black or white, Asian or American, when explaining who you are requires multiple hyphens. And when you think about it, that's something we all face. I mean, I'm white, but I'm also an Easterner transplanted to the Midwest. I'm a woman working in a formerly male profession, a mom, and a career woman. Social scientist Elena Connor believes we all navigate split identities and culture clashes, and not just along racial or ethnic lines. She finds many cultural conflicts boil down to two competing types of selves.
Yeah, in our book, Clash, we show that many of the world's fiercest cultural conflicts actually stem from the same root cause, which is the clash of independence versus interdependence. All of us have two selves. Our independent self wants to be separate, unique, and in control, but our interdependent self wants to be connected, similar, and cooperative. Depending on your unique mix of cultural backgrounds, you probably tend to use one self more than the other. And tensions flare when people using their independent self interact with people using their interdependent self.
So what you're talking about is the difference between seeing yourself as a lone actor in the world as opposed to seeing yourself as part of a web of connected relationships?
That's right. And if you look across cultures, if you look across cultural conflicts, you see that many of them fall out pretty cleanly across this independent and interdependent divide. So, for example, in our book, we cover eight conflicts. We cover East versus West, Global North versus Global South, men versus women, whites versus people of color, rich versus poor, the coast versus the heartland, religious conservatives versus religious liberals, and businesses versus nonprofits and governments.
That's a huge number of different kinds of cultural conflicts. And you're saying that you think all of them at heart are really conflicts between interdependence and independence?
That's right. And let me just give an example that I think a lot of people can relate to, and that is the example of men versus women. So I feel the clash of independence and interdependence every time I have to negotiate my salary. I know how to negotiate for a good salary. I've done it several times now in my career. And I know that you're supposed to crow to the rafters about your individual contributions and your unique talents and strengths. But when I'm in this negotiation process, I'm also keenly aware of how much my coworkers have contributed to my successes. I'm also very worried that my boss will think that I am arrogant if I sit there and talk about how awesome I am. So these are very interdependent concerns. And research shows, many hundreds of studies show, that women tend to be more in touch with their interdependent self. And so in these negotiation situations, I tend to ask for less than I know I'm worth, and I don't haggle as hard as I know I can. And I am not alone. Research shows that interdependent concerns compel many women to ask for less and walk away from negotiations sooner. Research also shows that women are actually pretty wise to do this, because when women are seen as too independent, they face more discrimination and backlash than when they are seen as interdependent.
Well, that's one example. Another example has to do with class and ethnicity. I'm curious, when did you personally begin to notice these two different value systems yourself?
I was raised by a single mother in a working-class neighborhood of Memphis, Tennessee, and I have an older brother, and so I think I became very aware just of gender and different ways of being a self quite young. I was pretty observant that my brother was treated differently from me and was expected to do things that I was not expected to do, and these expectations were along these independent, interdependent lines. But I really felt the clash of class cultures when I went away to college. So I went to Yale University in Connecticut, where I was suddenly surrounded by very wealthy classmates who had already developed all these unique ideas and peculiar taste, plus the confidence to share them. They were telling me about their ideas all the time. So I also had ideas, but I had been taught that it's better to sit silently and appear stupid than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. This was actually a sign my grandmother gave me to hang in my dorm room. And so I spent my first several years of college in mystified silence, worried that the admissions office had made a mistake. later, as a cultural psychologist, I understood that my struggles in college arose because the interdependent cultures I grew up in clashed with the independent culture of my college. And our lab at Stanford now has several studies showing that this clash of independence and interdependence holds back many talented working class kids who beat the odds and get into good colleges.
I'm curious, how do you see this difference playing out in terms of racial and ethnic divides, you know, between people of color and white Americans? I mean, we're talking just weeks after the protests in Ferguson and other places around the country, which have laid bare some really painful differences between black and white America. Does your concept of independence versus interdependence shed any particular light on what's been going on?
Yes. I mean, I think a very interesting aspect of race relations in the U.S. is European Americans, people of European heritage, think that race doesn't matter, whereas people of color are very aware that race matters very much, and it might be the most important factor that's shaping their life outcomes. So let me just give an example. So as I said, I'm from Memphis, Tennessee, and that's where the National Civil Rights Museum is located. And when I'm home, I like to visit the museum and take any out-of-town guests there. But many of my white friends back home will ask, why do we even have to have that museum? It just makes people feel bad. Racism is no longer a problem. We have a black president, for goodness sake. So during this cultural clash, I can see that my white friends are using their independent selves. They think that they are unique and in control and neither hindered nor helped by their race, history, or status. Meanwhile, my black friends tend to use their interdependent selves, which recognize that people are very much influenced by their race, history, and status. And hundreds of scientific studies actually support my black friends' supposition that race, history, and status are very important. So this idea that race doesn't matter, or we need to rise above race, or, you know, we're all just neutral, colorblind human beings, is a very independent idea. And it's an idea that tends to be endorsed by people of European heritage. And the problem, of course, with that colorblind ideology is that it can blind white Americans to the very real effects of race and racism for people of color.
So are you saying that having a more interdependent identity is, for minorities, a way of coping with discrimination?
Yes, certainly interdependence can be seen as a reaction to discrimination. You know, if you see me through the lens of race, I'm going to also see myself through the lens of race and begin to be constructed through your eyes as a person who is black first and foremost and a person second, if at all. But there's a very positive side to the interdependence that people of color have as well, and that is our cultures are and can be a source of great pride and a source of strength. In some studies, if you ask people to describe themselves, people of color are much more likely to spontaneously mention their race or ethnicity than are white people. And so being a person of color is very central to people's identities. And also, it can be a source of strength when you're facing discrimination and oppression. You can bind together around this shared identity and try to make change in a world that doesn't actually allow you to operate using your independent self.
So we've been talking about how this tension between independence and interdependence is involved in a whole variety of cultural conflicts, you know, not just racial and ethnic, but also regional, gender, religious, political. What do we do about it?
Just knowing that you have two selves as opposed to just one is unto itself an 100% increase in your psychological resources. Many people think, you know, I am who I am no matter where I am. But we're trying to communicate that. People do have these two different sides to themselves to be deployed in different situations. We are all multicultural. We all have at least two selves. There are times and situations when all of us are on the side of being the more interdependent and also less powerful person in a situation who's being misunderstood to our own detriment. As the world gets smaller, each of us will have to become more skilled at using both independence and interdependence to heal these cultural conflicts. And we will need to do that as the problems we face as a species become much larger than any one group of people can actually tackle. So climate problems, economic problems, even problems with natural resources, problems with food supplies. No one group can actually tackle that problem alone. We're going to have to share our strengths. It's time that we learn how to do that.
Elena Connor is the executive director of the Stanford Center for Social Psychological Answers to Real World Questions, also called SPARC, and the co-author of Clash: How to Thrive in a Multicultural World. And that's it for the conversation about split identities. When we come back, writer Steve Almond will bring us a bookmark. And with school back in session for the nation's college students, we'll take a closer look at the crisis in public higher education. I'm Ann Strainchamps. It's to the best of our knowledge. From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.